Welcome to the PS5 Central Podcast, where we give you all the news, the reviews, and the
rumors. I was trying something out there.
No, I liked it. I liked it on all the upcoming games for the PlayStation. I am your host, Vicarth, and I'm joined by the fabulous Jordan. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing good. Doing real good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, as per usual, doing well, my little catchphrase. So I've got a bit of a short and sharp, bit of a bitey episode today.
Oh, bitey.
So we obviously just had a few technical mishaps last week, or I should say scheduling conflicts, not technical
mishaps. Yeah, scheduling conflicts, yeah.
So we had a late recording of the episode, so there's only one. At this time of recording, you would have only heard that episode yesterday, so there is not much news. So what we thought, now that we're resetting our schedule back, we thought, look, we'll do an episode where we'll cover some of the news. There's not much, obviously, between those two periods, but we'll do a bit of an episode. We love a special interest topic type episode where we do our top tens or our best story, best games of the year, you know, underrated games, whatever, and keep sending your ideas and, you know, the lists you guys want to hear, you know, top five sports games, whatever. So we thought we'd do one, and it's not a top five. When we say top five or top six or however many we do, this is not an exhaustive list. I think this will be the first of many in this particular topic because when Jordan and I discussed this topic, I already had maybe 10 that I wanted to talk about, and Jordan had a few as well. So I thought, you know what, let's just do like a part one now and a little part two and three later. And what we'll say is this is in no way a ranking. It's just, you know, phenomenal games that we like. And the list I'll say is what we're talking about is we're going to be talking about our best or most loved or cherished multiplayer experiences on the PlayStation. So I'm taking a bit of a civil liberty here where some of these back in the day I was a bit of an Xbox gamer, but these games were on PlayStation and I really want to give them the spotlight because obviously I could have easily have just played them on PlayStation, but I had an Xbox at the time, right? So if they were on PlayStation, I'm going to include that, even though that might not have been the platform I played them on. We are going to do this list and we just thought, yeah, there's too many. So we're just going to sort of do a part one and, you know, we'll talk about, we'll maybe do a part two later down the line when we feel like it and keep talking about some of the amazing, amazing experiences that we've had on the multiplayer. And this is for PlayStation only. So, you know, for me, let's say Halo is one that's just so central to my heart as a gamer. But you know, that won't be included because it's obviously Xbox and we're talking about PlayStation here, or a lot of strategy games, you know, Age of Empires, Command and Conquer Generals, like those. Yeah.
Mario Kart comes to mind, or Smash
Mario
Brothers.
Kart. Yeah. Even the original Mario, and that's not obviously multiplayer, but where you have that sort of couch experience. And that's what we're sort of defining multiplayer as. You know, this can be local multiplayer, co-op where it's just the two or three or four of you, where it's an online multiplayer. It's all that sort of couch social multiplayer experience where you're
the vibe working. It's like the vibe of the multiplayer.
Yeah, you're either working with or against someone in some form of capacity. So before we go into that, let's top off with the news, Jordan. Jeez. We've got four quick pieces here today and some interesting articles and things to talk about. So Jordan, do you want to fire away with the first news article?
Yes, this is probably the most topical that relates to, I would think, most people's interests. This is probably the most applies to the general audience, probably the most out of all our stories, say. And that is that it appears as though Insomniac Games have gone out and tweeted that they are well underway with Spider-Man 2 development and they are on track, making good progress, and they should still be hitting 2023 with Spider-Man 2 next year. So someone tweeted at them with the Twitter account, "Come on, Spider-Sense," and they said, "I started to get worried. I've been bugging Insomniac about it, but I stopped after they told me it wasn't ready. I really hope it doesn't get delayed." All right, well, first of all, entitled much. Like, okay, all right, that's weird. That's a weird thing to tweet out and think it was okay to do that. But yeah. And then Insomniac Games just tweeted out quite bluntly, don't. We're making good progress and it's still slated for 2023. Showing games takes time, effort, resources, and coordination, which in the swiftest way possible shuts down like that heckler, because like, why is he heckling like that? And puts it out there that, yeah, it's coming. So like, chill, it'll be here.
Yeah.
I would suggest it's probably still going to get delayed. Like, it might, I reckon it'll get delayed from a date in 2023 to later in 23, with the potential of it getting delayed into the start of 24, maybe. But I don't think that's a big of a, that's that big of a deal, because this game's going to sell gangbusters no matter when it comes out. This game could come out like the same day as Elden Ring and it would still sell gangbusters because it's huge. Spider-Man is just huge. And we can't forget Venom. Venom is also huge.
The prediction.
So, yeah.
The prediction, the Venom. But yeah, I agree. It is weird. Like, as in, it is weird that that guy was worried, quote unquote. Because if you think of Miles Morales came out in 2020, like, I know Miles Morales is a smaller experience, but it's still a AAA game. Like, it came out in 2020 and it's been 2 years, man. Like, and he's like, I'm so worried. I'm like, what are you worried about? It's either going to come out in 2022 or be delayed into 20. Oh, sorry. It's either going to come out in 2023 or be delayed into 2024. Like, is it really the end of the world? I don't know what the worry is, because the game's coming out. We just don't, it's not a matter of if, but when. So
yeah. I'm not one of those people who gets freaked. Like, clearly this dude is, but I'm not one of those people who gets like freaked out when it's like, oh, and we've talked about this before with delays. Like, oh my God, I can't believe this game's been delayed. I just want to play it. Don't they know I want to play it? It's like, chill.
Yeah.
Just chill. I mean, games get delayed. It's only getting better.
It's only getting better. And in this day and age, in our current landscape and industry, it's we need good games to come out on launch in a good state, because it's just become the norm, hasn't it, Jordan, that games come out broken, like the day one patch, which I think, look, that's great, because you know, you remember back in the day where if there was some sort of patch that needed to happen, the game would, back in the CD days, you'd either, the game would just release broken, or they would have to like put a new line of CDs with stickers on them saying that it's like the updated version and take off the shelves. Remember that happened
With Grand Theft Auto San Andreas? They passed out
hot coffee.
Yeah, they passed out hot coffee.
Yeah.
And it was like a way you could tell it was like that the San Andreas was red or something. And
that
was a way you could tell whether it was the one with it or not.
I don't know. I think it was Halo or something had something similar where they had to recall some copies. But look, so I understand day one patches are important. They allow the devs to have more flexibility. They sort of work right until the end. They don't just have to wait till it's gone gold and then they're done. They can continue to work, which is great. But it has brought this expectation that games come out broken. Like, I can't even think of a major AAA game where it hasn't come out like not broken and or not needing work. Not broken might be a bit of an overstatement, but not needing some sort of work to not to improve, but just to get it into its intended original state. So, you know, the only ones
that, I would say that the main culprits were, I reckon, are multiplayer games.
Yeah, multiplayer. So yeah.
A game that is online based, I reckon, is one of the main culprits that do come out I don't want to say unfinished, but unpolished. Would be the best, I'd say.
Unpolished.
Whereas I feel like a lot of single player games usually do, and I know that I don't normally play them before the day one patch is installed. But for the most part, I can't think of too many single player games that I've played. I know there's been a few exceptions this year, but like, I can't think of too many that I've played this year that have come out with too many issues. Like, Sifu was pretty good at launch. Stray was pretty good at launch. Rollerdrome was perfect at launch. There was like no hiccups that I noticed. Elden Ring, from what I can gather, with Elden Ring, it's usually like glitches that they have to get out, and it's usually not like a game breaking glitch. There might be that one.
Bugs spot. Are different.
Yeah, there might be that one spot where you fall through the map or whatever.
Mm.
But it's usually like, oh, there's an Infinite Souls glitch here. Oh, there's an Infinite. Oh, what are they called in Elden Ring?
Blood Echoes, right? Yeah. Blood Echoes?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, is that Bloodborne?
Yeah, I feel like
Runes. Isn't it called Runes?
Yeah, Runes. It is Runes.
Sorry, I'm thinking of, yeah. No, you're right. I think I should have had a caveat, thanks, that they're saying multiplayer. Obviously, Overwatch being the most recent. But there's always two uncertainties. One if a multiplayer would come out in a good state. So I just have no certainty on buying a multiplayer game day one, right?
Yeah.
Overwatch is free to play, which is why I downloaded it. But had it been paid, I wouldn't have bought it just yet. Because currently right now, the servers are unplayable. Like I played it last week and my God, you just, I'm teleporting. Like it's horror. It's unplayable, especially when you play Hitscan like McCree and stuff. You just, or Cassidy, you just can't. The second uncertainty is there. I'm like past 2 years, George, I don't think I've ever taken a release date seriously. An initial release date.
Yeah.
It's just, it's weird that like, they just have this date with the full expect, like, mate, I mean, look, we don't know what's behind the curtain. And obviously they clearly are planning to hit that date. And, you know, that's where things like crunch and that sort of stuff come in to really meet that. But the question is, why not? I think of a house contract, right? Like, especially in Australia, right? The way build contracts work is like, they'll have a build date where they have to build it by the house. And I'm just, you know, recent home purchaser, home owner, so I'm familiar with this, and they put a final build date way in advance, right? Like way beyond what they're expected to meet. So obviously they're liable, and in case of gaming release dates, they're not liable, but they put release dates way, or they put these build dates way in advance, so they know they'll meet it for sure, right? Yeah. Now it's a bit of a different scenario here, because that build date is, you know, latest date. Release dates aren't latest dates. Like on this day, it'll come out, right?
Mm.
But so it is different, but it is interesting. Like, why not just push these? Like, why did Sony announce God of War coming out in 2021, wasn't it? Or 2022? When we knew for sure, it was 2021, I think, the original release date.
The original release date was 2021.
Like, first of all, none of us believed that, but why? Like, we knew it's coming out in 2022, if not 2023. So I don't know what the mathematics, the statistics, the analysis, whatever they do to get these release dates, but clearly they're either overestimating or, yeah, it's clearly overestimating. Like, this sort of stuff in project management, they should be planned for, that there's going to be, you know, slack time, there's going to be downtime, there's that sort of thing. Like, this is what people get paid the big bucks for. So,
there's also the things that we probably don't see because they go over our heads, which is like they got shareholders to please. They got all this stuff to worry about. They've got fiscal years to worry about.
Yeah, and that's like Cyberpunk, right?
Yeah, I mean, we don't know whether their scope got bigger as the project went on. And I was like, okay, this is going to take longer to do because they've really got to polish out these bugs. We really want to polish out the third act of the game. We want to add this boss fight in. There's things like that can be added into.
Yeah, and that's where the nature of software development is a bit different to, so let's say, a physical product where, you know, with a physical product, you have, like, let's say, an iPhone, you have the specs. This is what we're going to design it for. Software is, I'm just talking about the hardware point of view. You've got the chips, you've got the screen, the camera, all those components. They're being made. This is what's going to happen. Here's the schedule. But with software, it's different because you can always just iterate on it more and more and more. And it's a, like a live build, right? So you make a good point, George. And it actually reminds me of this game Witchfire. I think this actually came out a couple of days ago, maybe last week.
Yeah.
It's a game by Witchfire. This is the guys that made The Vanishing of Ethan Carter. I think it's the Astronaut. So they've delayed their game, which is a shooter, to 2023. And apparently they were pretty open about it. They said basically we just thought we want to make this game open world and make a more open world, open style, like Fallout 4. So I think they initially had a smaller scope and they were just pretty open and saying, hey, look, we're widening the scope. We're going to make this sort of an open world, open type game. So we're delaying it to 2023. And that's an example. You're right, Jordan. But that's also a form of mismanagement. Like if you can't get your scope right or you're continuing, then that's also a way of like some sort of mismanagement, I think.
Yeah.
But look, it's games are different. It's because games are art, you know. You know, in software, an application has a specific purpose and function, but you know, games are art, so it's going to continue to iterate. And there is leeway, but it just. So I'm not saying it's good or bad where the industry's at, but I'm just saying it is what it is in terms of we never believe a release date, and we never believe the initial state of a multiplayer game, which is kind of sad with the multiplayer side. The release date, I don't care because I'm not impatient, but Yeah, the multiplayer thing kind of sucks because it just sucks that I can't even play Overwatch. Like, it's unplayable for me.
Yeah, you've got to wait. You've got to, and when it eventually does become playable, that's when you go, oh, well, the release date's here now. Now I can play it.
Exactly. And you know what the funny thing is? Like, credit to Call of Duty, man, because they every year release a good AAA, pretty polished. Like, I'm not talking about gun balance or anything like that. It is a polished experience.
It is, yeah. And it always has that Call of Duty feel. No game has ever matched the feel of a Call of Duty game. Titanfall got real, real close, but no one's ever matched the smoothness of it. You play a game like Battlefield, you feel the sluggishness. You feel it's just not what a Call of Duty game has to offer.
I was just going to say, man, Battlefield, like, have a look at Battlefield in their state.
Mm.
Like, have a look. Anyone just read up on Battlefield and see how that game, that is absolutely abysmal the way things are going with that. That launch was disgustingly bad. So, look, it just goes to show, I think it's a credit to the studios and the management behind Call of Duty and what Activision are doing there. So, and the money, obviously. But
the money that it makes,
you know, I would still say that EA, like, I don't think EA are hindered by money to make Battlefield. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's just, I don't know what it is, talent or whether it's just the build they have, the engine. I mean, Frostbite's somewhat dated in my opinion, but anyway. So that's, yeah, what a tangent, Jordan. What a tangent I made.
I was like, we only got four stories, but I'll tell you what, we'll make it feel like 14.
We love to have a chat. But Spider-Man 2, yeah, excited for that. I think 2023, 2024, whenever it comes out, it's going to be very, very exciting. And I love Insomniac and what they're doing.
Yeah.
All right. Next bit of news.
Resi. So we sort of do these two like back to back, I reckon, because they're sort of in the same vein.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. So, sorry, Vike, take it away.
So, Resident Evil 4. So, PS5 and PS4 remake headlines at the RE showcase just one day after the Silent Hill stream.
Yeah. So, Silent Hill is going to be revealed on the 19th of October.
Yeah,
In one stream from Konami. I think it's Konami, isn't it? Yeah. So there's a Konami confirmed that there will be a Silent Hill transmission on Wednesday, October the 19th, which will probably be out as you are listening to this.
Mm.
And then the day after, so on Thursday the 20th, we'll have a Resident Evil showcase where they're going to be showing off Resident Evil Village Gold Edition and Resident Evil 4 remake, which for Resident Evil fans, I'm sure, is super exciting. Me being a big old baby, not playing these scary games, I'm not that excited for it. I'm excited for the people who do like it, though, and are into it. But they're a little bit too spoopy for me, even during Spooktober.
Yeah, Resi 4, that's a big one. You can't screw that up because that is held in an incredibly high standard by the Resi fans. That is like the perfect Resi for a lot of people, the best, I should say. So you can't screw that up. So that's a big one. And they've done well with these remakes. I know Resi 1 remake and 2 are great. 3, people weren't a full fan of.
I wonder whether 3 is like what they were remaking in the first place wasn't that great. So that was
why. Maybe. I think number 4 will be telling. But look, even the Silent Hill stuff, is it a remake of Silent Hill? Is it a remake of Silent Hill 2? Because I think Blooper Team, which is the Polish studio, they're rumored to be working on the Silent Hill 2 remake, if that's correct. So, we'll see what they're up to. And I guess all will be revealed at that time, which is the 19th for Silent Hill. I have a feeling it's got absolutely nothing to do with Abandoned, and I have a feeling that is a full sham, and I just can't wait to see what the hell happens with all of that, because I'm still like, I don't know
if it's a scam. We'll never see it again.
We'll see it again, but I think the evidence, there was just too many breadcrumbs that led to Silent Hill. Like, it was just too coincidental for it not to have been deliberate. So I think it was definitely deliberate. Whether that was a deliberate lie or whether it's a deliberate truth, we don't know. But I don't think it's got anything to do with old mate Hassan Karaman. But so that'll be interesting, especially for Halloween horror fans. So, all right,
The other one we'll quickly touch on is, so I'm going back to the screen.
Gotham Knights.
Yeah, so Gotham Knights, and a little bit of a plague tale as well. So Gotham Knights will not have performance options on console, and it will run at 30 FPS, whether you are on the PS5 or the PS4, because on the PS4 as well, isn't it, Gotham Knights?
No, it's only PS. They're cancelled. Remember, they cancelled the last gen versions. So
planned for release this Friday, October 21st, for PS5, Xbox Series X, and PC. And it will only be playable in 30 frames per second. So reading from VGC here, Fleur Marty shared news on the game.
The executive producer.
On Friday. Yeah, executive producer of the Gotham Knights project, and said that, and I quote, "I know many of you are wondering about the availability of a performance mode for Gotham Knights on console," Marty wrote. "Due to the types of features we have in our game, like providing a fully untethered co-op experience in our highly detailed open world, it's not as straightforward as lowering the resolution and getting a higher FPS. For this reason, our game does not have a performance quality toggle option and will run at 30 FPS on consoles." So this can be super disappointing. If it is a steady 30 FPS, this will be okay. Like, it will not be the end of the world. Will it look as pretty as a 60 FPS game? Absolutely not. However, is it the end of the world? No.
Here's the thing, though. I would always take 60 FPS over fidelity, because I actually think a 60 FPS actually makes it more, like, increases the fidelity in a way, just visually to our eyes. That's why I always played Spider-Man, Miles Morales on 60 FPS.
Yeah, right? I did as well. I never used to care about it. And then when I actually saw the difference, I was like, oh, okay,
dude,
I have to play this.
Yeah,
this
it's way. Crazy. And the weird thing is with Gotham Knights, like, it's not that good looking of a game, to be honest. Like, the character models and stuff. It looks PS4. It looks late PS3. Like, I'm not trying to be mean, but Last of Us PS3 is comparable in terms of the animations. Now, I'm talking about gameplay. When I look at the trailer and stuff, that looks that actually looks pretty good, highly polished, but still, like, when you look at gameplay, it's, I don't know why they can't do 60 FPS untethered. I mean, Arkham Knight, like, people have been, there was a tweet that went somewhat viral where they compared that a screenshot of Gotham Knights and a screenshot of Arkham Knight. And, like, Arkham Knight just looks way more detailed, way better, the cape and everything.
Well, and we will need to see that sort of stuff. You go, like, is it just because it's on YouTube? Is it just
perfect
like
angle, compressed video, all that sort of stuff? So you take that with a grain of salt.
But we've also said from the beginning that we don't, you and me in particular have, I know Dan has been a bit more positive on Gotham Knights. You and me have very much been from the beginning, I'm pretty sure. Like, don't know, Chief. Don't know if this is for us.
Exactly. I'm keen for the story. And if it's a good story, I'll probably watch it on YouTube, to be honest. If it's good gameplay, then obviously I'll consider it. But right now it doesn't interest me, which is sad because I never thought I'd ever see a DC property that wouldn't interest me. But I guess it comes out this Friday. We'll have to wait and see how that game turns out, and we'll see if we're right or wrong.
Yeah. The other one that we mentioned was about a Plague Tale. So a Plague Tale will run at 30 FPS on the PS5, but if you have 120 hertz capable TV, it will run at 40 FPS. So you can do 1440, 40 FPS with 120 hertz TV. Now, this is initially disappointing to me because I played through, obviously, Innocence, the previous entry, over the holidays, and I played it on the performance mode. Actually, I don't know if it had a toggle, but I played it. It was 60 FPS, and because of all the swarms of rats in that game, it made it look so much nicer. I can imagine how shocking it would have looked if it was not in 60 FPS. So this is a little bit disappointing. I'm hoping that, like, the fidelity of the game will take the place of that and it won't matter too much. But having seen some reviews, it does look like it chugs quite a bit, and it does seem like that it's missing the 60 FPS. So we can get to the review roundup in a second. That's just something to sort of keep in mind for it. So for the review roundup, it's actually being a Plague Tale Requiem for the PS5 is currently sitting in an 84 Metascore, and that is with 51 reviews all up. There's 47 positive, 3 mixed, 1 negative. And the negative review is actually pretty negative, and it's from VGC as well. So we just read from VGC before about the Gotham Knights thing. And the VGC review, they give it a 4 out of 10, and they really hammer home that the technical problems in this game are really hampering it. So the performance is quite bad in terms of the frame rate. It chugs, it freezes. It looks really nice. So apparently the visuals are fantastic, but they are ruined by the performance of it and how well it runs. So it's something to keep an eye on. It is being received generally pretty well. Like 47 positive reviews out of 51 is nothing to sneeze at, but it is important to keep in mind that, yeah, there are some people who may find the performance issues a little bit too bad. And we're excited to get hands on hopefully later this week with that one to talk about next week.
Yeah, I'm excited for this. I know I probably won't be playing it, but it looks good. And people are pretty favorable on it. It is interesting that people give Gotham Knights a hard time, like myself, on 30 FPS, but with Plague Tale, it's sort of, I don't know, 30 FPS, no one's really having thrown up in arms about it compared to...
More in the mainstream, I mean, Gotham Knights too.
Yeah, I mean, and Gotham Knights is AAA. Like, Plague Tale is AA. You know, it's not technically indie, but not really. But yeah, I mean, Gotham Knights is an Activision or WB, you know, big production. So you'd think they'd be able to. Well, you know, one thing I love about Plague Tale, Plague Tale, the developers... Is it Asobo? Asobo Studios, right?
I'll have to confirm.
I'm trying to remember. Yeah, it's Asobo because they're the guys that did do Flight Simulator.
Oh, they are too, yeah. Yeah.
So it's so funny that they're going from Flight Simulator to Plague Tale Innocence. What a cool, diverse set of staff,
the range of them.
I know that is some sick range because Flight Simulator is insane. Like the fact that it's a tool used for training and stuff like that is so sick. But it's going to be interesting to see how Gotham Knights goes and how Plague Tale goes. Both obviously big releases coming out this week. So we'll have to wait and see how those go next week, where we can do a bit of a review roundup and see how they are fully. All right, Jordan, anything else you want to say about the news?
No, I don't think so. Just, yeah, hopefully a nice big news week this week. And, yeah, we'll be back at it with full news roundup next week.
Done. All right, let's go to our special interest topic, which is the best multiplayer experiences. So we're going to be talking about... I think, Jordan, you've got 3 games and I've got 3.
Yeah, about 3. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've got about 3 and then we've got a few that we share as well.
Yeah, so I think 6 in total is what we have. Yeah. So we'll talk about 6 multiplayer experiences that really resonated with us. This is in no way a ranking because there's still plenty that I've left out that I want to talk about next time.
And it's by no means ones that we think are the best. It's just the ones that we have fond memories of. Ones that we think might be our favorites, we really like, we love, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. For instance, one noticeable one that is missing for me that I want to talk about next time is something like It Takes Two. You know, I thought that's a phenomenal multiplayer cooperative game. And, you know, I gave that my game of the year last year. So I would love to talk about that. But I think we'll talk about that in another, when we continue this list or continue this conversation at another episode later time. So let's jump into it. All right, so 6 games. Jordan, do you want to start or do you want me to start?
Yeah, let's start off one that we both had talked about that we loved. Let's go with Warzone to start off with. So we have waxed poetic on the podcast about our love for Warzone and how much it hurts that we aren't playing it now because sort of really the state that it's currently in. And that I think you were the same. You didn't really enjoy the new map, the Caldera.
Yeah.
It was just not for me. Verdansk was so much better. And I regret wishing for a new map towards the end of Verdansk's days because I reckon I'd probably still be playing it if it was still Verdansk. Probably not as heavily as I was, but I'd definitely still be interested. Whereas now with Caldera, I could not think of anything worse. I'm like, nope, that's not for me. But I have so many fond memories of running around Verdansk. It was, I think in part it was due to where the world was at the time, with it being the beginning of the pandemic, especially getting into it and then working from home and having the opportunity to play a lot more. And then like actually getting my fiance involved, and she was super stoked about it, and she would watch, and she'd know everything we were talking about.
That's awesome.
Anyway, it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool.
I mean, for me, Warzone is phenomenal. It's probably my favorite battle royale I can think of, and it was such a clean, polished experience. You know, I was just waiting, you know, because, you know, the whole battle royale genre, like for me, like you remember when it was just Fortnite and PUBG, right? It was actually PUBG first.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to play PUBG because whenever I saw it, I'm like, this looks so cool, so much fun, so awesome. But it never came out to PlayStation. And then Fortnite came. And then they came to everything. And then PUBG complained. And I'm like, mate, you guys had so much time to do it, to get accessible to all consoles and all that sort of stuff, and you didn't do it. So that's your fault. But I'll say Fortnite obviously came, and then I wasn't that into Fortnite, to be honest. But then Blackout came, you know, Call of Duty. I'm like, okay, cool. This is like a Call of Duty take. You know, it's like with phones. It's like you just wait for Apple to do their version of the feature.
Yeah.
And like Apple do it well. And it's sort of like the same with COD. And I'm like, okay. And Blackout was, for what it's worth, it was a good first take, I thought. Obviously, they learned a lot from it. But yeah, obviously when Warzone came out, like, man, what a polished, clean experience. It was so easy to get used to. The mat was phenomenal. Yeah, like that low floor, high ceiling type thing. And it was just a lot of fun, to be honest. And just Call of Duty mechanics in a battle royale, no brainer. And I still think it's one of the best multiplayer experiences I've ever had. So much fun playing with you guys, intense endings, and when you win. And yeah, I just cannot wait for Warzone 2. Like, I'm so excited for that. I think it's a great experience. I don't know what else to say, but I will say, look, there are negatives. I think the way they supported Warzone was really bad. There's a huge content drought, didn't really do much for the longest time. And even the stuff they did do, like the King Kong and Godzilla more recently, or before that, where they did these other little events, they really screwed the pooch. Like, I remember when there was all these, when they were like Nuke Verdansk and all these fan theories and stuff were coming out, nothing happened in the end. Like, nothing, there was no payoff for all this fan driven, like, lore and hype and excitement. And it's not like they're meant to answer what the fans want in a way. Like, the fans can just conjure up whatever they want that, you know, the devs have to answer. But they had so much time and they could have easily have done it, I feel like. And yeah, I don't know. It just really sucked. And then the other thing is, like, the way they would introduce new content was by making that new gun or something like that the meta, forcing you to grind and unlock. And the way the unlock system worked was really bad because it's like so much individual attachments and XP and took so long. And by the time I would grind up something, it was not meta anymore. And it's like, I've just been killed by this gun hundreds of times by people who bought the battle pass and things like that. And then by the time I can get it normally, it's already useless. And
that's why you need to do what we did. You just stay with the growl and you're fine.
Yeah, you're right. The growl is good.
Anything but the growl,
and you're gonna get good. And that's the thing, right? It's sort of like, you know, that is what the battle pass is for. That's how they monetize, and that's what they've got to do. Those are the tactics they've got to do. So I don't blame them for it, but it just meant that it was at my expense. You know, it just is what it is. And if you like it, you like it. And if you don't, then you don't. I was the one who just didn't like it. I wasn't a fan. That actually kind of turned me off Warzone at the end. But I'm probably not the customer they want if I'm not paying for it. So who knows?
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Not 1 cent did I put into Warzone, and I played it for like almost 20 days, if not more. Yeah.
And I did put money into it because I was just sort of a bit time poor, but I don't know. Like, it is what it is, but I will say that the game is phenomenal. And, you know, what else? Oh, the other thing I should have said is the hacking, right? They took so long to respond. And by the time they did, it was just, people are already off it, and they were going on to things like Apex and other battle royales, and they just took so long to implement a anti-cheat, and it was really bad. Like, every game there was hackers, and
that's the other thing as well. I never really had that much of a problem with hackers. Not that I didn't care, but not that I never really encountered them. I can probably think of as many times as I can count on one hand that I actually ran into hackers. And other than that, it was a pretty clean experience for me. So I'm probably lucky in that regard. So I'm probably an outlier.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've played against hackers in other games before, and I can acknowledge how much it sucks.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah. What's your number two, mate?
Number two, well, I'm going to say The Last of Us Factions, right? So that's my next one. I actually thought this is a really unique multiplayer experience. I had so much fun with this. It was just a unique experience. Like the Last of Us, I thought obviously was very clean gameplay wise, right? And I would never have thought I wanted a multiplayer version of those mechanics, that shooting mechanics, that third person, that, you know, like that close combat, like when you're shooting someone and you go up close to them, you take out the bat and whack them and that sort of thing. I never knew that I wanted that in a multiplayer. And like, how would this work if it was a multiplayer with a map and the way people cover? You know, third person's always like, when you're behind cover, they can't see you, but you can see them when you're behind cover. I just didn't know how that was going to work. And it worked well. I actually think the maps were pretty good. Like, and I think they actually were well-designed maps. Like, you agree with this, but I'm always an advocate of the best multiplayer game, it hinges on the maps. If you have great mechanics, but a crappy maps, then you're screwed. Call of Duty Ghosts being one of them, right? And in Infinite Warfare, whatever, like, you need good maps. That is the ultimate prerequisite for a good multiplayer experience, is the maps, right? So I actually think that was really good. I loved the whole... There was like this resource management that was a big part of the multiplayer, right? It wasn't just, here's a death match. It was obviously it had the whole reinforcement system, and it was 4-4 or 5-4, I think 5-5.
4-4, I think. 4-4. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, the key was that you know, like in a game like Call of Duty, right? Let's say, you know, in one game, you're using the same gun, you're trying to get the kill streak, whatever. But you're using the same loadout, same gun, theoretically, assuming you don't change. So what you have and your power as a character doesn't change. It's all about the skill and building up to kill streaks or whatever. Now, with Last of Us, it was the more you kill, the more resources you got. And then there was this really cool resource management crafting system where it's like, okay, do I get a med kit? Do I get a Molotov? Do I get a bomb, a mine? Do I upgrade my bat to be a one-hit kill? Do I upgrade my gun? Like, and it just meant that you had this amazing subsystem of resource management that allowed you to get stronger, whether even if you were doing bad, you were still earning and you were still able to upgrade yourself and then get better through that, right? But then when you were dominating, it was like, man, I'm getting all the best stuff straight away. And it was this really cool system. Now, it wasn't perfect. I still think the melee was a bit overpowered. There'd be times where I'd be shooting a guy and he would just run at me in a zigzag formation and then just one hit melee me. I'm like, man, come on.
Because your weapons were all pretty heavy. Yeah. And like, it was like shotgun. It was like semi-automatic revolver. Rifle.
Yeah. And that, like, don't get me wrong, but I think that was such an amazing experience. It was underrated. And I think... that was a great, it was, I had so much fun. Even the little thing about the whole, you have 12 weeks, your camp.
Yeah, 12-week cycles. It was a nice little progression thing other than just cosmetics and other than just, oh, you got this level, so you get this. Like it was like, here's these resources, do with them what you please.
And that was a cool system, that there was this whole resource management that was fundamental. That was fundamental to that game. And that was as much of a system as just the shooting was.
Yeah.
Right. So, I loved it.
It was such a good thematic match for The Last of Us as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what, like, you know, in Call of Duty, and I know I'm always complaining to Call of Duty, but you know, you're always unlocking new guns and new attachments, new equipment, new kill streaks. This was just, there was only four guns. Well, like, I think there was maybe a couple more special weapons, but there was like...
I think you could unlock like a flamethrower and stuff.
Yeah, flamethrower. But there's only four to six main guns, and that was it. And you can upgrade them in game, but make do with what you've got. And yeah, it was just really good. I had so much fun, especially playing with you guys. I don't know. Is there anything else you want to say about that one, Jordan?
No, not too much. I honestly... like, I enjoyed my time with it, but it was very much a thing that I did to get the platinum in The Last of Us very early on. I would have probably played it still. I don't reckon I would have played it as much, however. Because I did like the two 12-day cycles for, well, I did the 12-day cycle for the Fireflies, 12-day cycle for whatever the other faction was. I can't remember what their name was. And then, yeah, then I was basically done. I didn't play any more of it after that. I did me two cycles and I was finished.
Fair enough.
But the prospect of like the mainline Last of Us factions though coming does excite me. But what did excite me at the time as well was Rocket League. And that is my number two that I'm going to
Nice.
talk about, or our number three overall. So I was probably a bit late to the party with Rocket League. I remember it was, we talked about this last week, it was free on the store for PlayStation Plus back in 2015, 16,
Think it's
something like that.
2015.
Yeah, it was one of those years, which is getting close to almost 10 years ago now, which is frightening. And I was a bit late to the party, and you guys were all about it. And you'd been playing. And so I downloaded it, and I wouldn't say I instantly fell in love, but it didn't take me long until I was completely hooked on it. My playing time now has been lost because of moving between consoles and everything, but I would easily have about 400 to 500 hours on Rocket League.
Jeez.
Like, it was a lot. So much. Oh, actually, no, maybe it wasn't that much. It was a lot, though. Like, I played so much Rocket League.
Yeah, I remember you played heaps of it and you
Yeah,
were
absolutely
gone.
flogged it. Like, I'd come home from uni and I'd be like, all right, I'm gonna play a single player game. And I had like my 1v1 dueling strategy down. Dan and I would play. Like, I remember this all the time. It'd get to the point where it was like 1:30 and I'd be playing something else and I'd be hopping into bed. And I'd literally get into bed and Dan would be like, do you want to play some Rocket? And I'd be like, oh, of course I do. And we'd jump in and play 2v2 ranked, and it was so much fun.
That's
So
awesome.
much fun.
I love that.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I loved Rocket League as well, and I didn't play it as much as you guys, but I certainly played my fair share, and I think it's one of the best designed games in terms of that low floor, high ceiling. Is that
Yeah.
the term? Yeah, where it's that low barrier to entry because you can be bad or decent or a beginner and you can still have a lot of fun. But then I remember watching like the Rocket League, the actual pro players in Rocket League, and it
Yeah.
was insane. The
Oh, the
tricks,
things they
the
do are insane.
techs,
Their aerial,
oh, the
it's
aerials, the tactics
crazy.
they had, and man, it was phenomenal to watch. So I just think there was this amazing ability to be able to such a huge progression, a skill progression, and you never felt penalized for not being good because it was just so much fun. Just a lot of fun. And you just drove around, had a good time. And it was so much fun. I remember playing with you guys, Kyle, Mitch, and Tom, and those sort of things. And it was phenomenal. Yeah, it was really fun stuff. Definitely a great one, Jords. All
Yeah.
right.
What's your
We'll
next one?
go for my next one. And we'll just say this. We won't probably say much on it, or maybe we will. But we'll say Call of Duty. I know we talked about Warzone already, but
We probably have our specific Call of Duty
yeah. And
ones that we want to talk about.
we'll just call this next bit of chat the Call of Duty segment. In terms of we're putting everything underneath. We're putting all the Call of Duties underneath this topic right here.
With the
So
exception
that'd
of
be
Warzone. Warzone's its own thing. We're more talking about like the previous Call of Duties and the things in them that were multiplayer based.
So I'm going to first off say, I'm going to list out a couple and then Jordan's probably going to list out his ones. I'm going to say Modern Warfare 2 for me is probably the big one, not just in terms of multiplayer, but in terms of Spec Ops as well. I had such a great time playing Spec Ops with Dan when I was younger, in terms of the co-op stuff, doing a lot of the missions together, but obviously mainly the multiplayer. I mean, it was so incredibly broken, but so damn good. With the kill streaks, that was the first Call of Duty where like kill streaks became this amazing, like
Yeah, because
so
that's
fun and varied.
previously been just 357.
And you could customize.
Yeah,
You're
and
right. It
this
was
is,
like recon and
yeah, so I think COD 4 was UAV
artillery
airstrike
and chopper.
chopper. Yeah,
Yeah, I think
back
like
alley.
before, like World at War was like UAV or recon plane, artillery and
Artillery and then
dogs.
dogs.
Yeah, and not only that, but the amount of guns and attachments you could customize.
Perks, pro perks.
Pro perks. And then the challenges. Like, you just see people running with Marathon, like, in a circle, just to, like, unlock Marathon Pro. Or
get the call signs and emblems and everything.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, get 50 kills with the thermal scope to unlock this attachment. And you know what? I kind of think about this, George, and it's like, you can't really do that this day and age because, like, I don't know. It just seems a lot more pro and a lot less like fun, where it's like in Call of Duty, where it's like, if you had to tell me that I had to get 50 kills with an ACOG scope in order to unlock the next attachment, I'd be like, piss off. Like, I do not want to use a scope I don't like.
We demand excellence at all times.
Yeah, we demand excellence at all, the KD and all that sort of stuff. But I don't know. At that time, that place, that state of mind, it was just so much fun. And once again, the maps were phenomenal. You know, Terminal, Rust, Afghan was great. You know, Karachi, Skid Row.
Karachi was probably the worst of them all, but was still good.
Still good. Favela.
Yeah.
Like, I liked Wasteland. I know a lot of people hated Derailed. I didn't mind it. Yeah, I liked Wasteland and Derailed. And yeah, it was just a lot
really
of fun.
Good, they had really good downloadable maps, like the two map packs they had, Resurgence and something else, like Bailout and Fuel. And I think it was called Trailer Park, and then they had one called Carnival.
The big one was the tactical nuke. That was like the biggest like boss move. Like, I love that idea of a game-ending kill streak, because that was so good, because it just, the YouTube space went crazy for the quickest nuke and things like that. Like, it opened up this whole genre, and I thought it was such a creative, really good creative thing to do. And obviously quick scoping. Oh, how good if you get High Rise as a map? But like, it's just phenomenal game. I think that's such a great experience. And I don't want to understate the co-op as well. Like, actually, that was the first game I ever platinumed. I know I played that back on the Xbox, so 100% achievements, 1000G, whatever. It was the first game I did because, I just had so much fun 3-starring everything and getting Dan's help for a lot of it and that sort of thing. So I'll definitely say Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. And the next one I want to say, but I'll give it to you because that's your favorite. Yeah. Take it away.
Is just Call of Duty Black Ops. I mean, like, I've talked about this. It's my favorite COD. It's the first COD I played that came out at launch.
Mm.
But even though it was my first, I still think objectively it's one of the best. We won't talk about the campaign too much, but it has one of the best campaign stories with such a good variety of missions. And then the multiplayer was excellent. It's fixed so many of the problems that people had with MW2, like completely nerfed noob tubes, completely nerfed quick scopers. Stopping power was gone. So stopping power was a perk in COD 4 and World at War and MW2, which was extra bullet damage. And because everyone ran it, you had to run it. Otherwise, if you got into a gunfight, you were going to lose because they'd kill you quicker. So they got rid of stopping power altogether. And it made for a super balanced experience. The maps were amazing. I mean, Firing Range, Summit, WMD,
Jungle.
Nuketown. We spoke about Nuketown last week. Like, Nuketown's there as well.
I forgot about Summit. Havana. How good a map was Summit, man.
Havana. What was the other one? Hanoi.
What was the one? I'm trying to think of the one. I know it was a Black Ops 3 map, but I'm pretty sure it was a remake of the Black Ops. Array was good. It was a remake of the Black Ops 1 where there's that big fountain water feature in the middle. There's like a house to the left. Big water feature in the middle. I'll look it up.
Look it up for me. But yeah, the multiplayer was amazing. I played something like 23 days. I don't think it was 23. I think it was like 20 or something like that. But played so much of it to the point where, like, I was just like, it was lived and breathed Black Ops 1. And then how could we forget? I also had very good downloadable maps. I think I had 4 map packs.
Hangar 18 was one of them, I think.
Hangar 18. I feel like that might have been a DLC map.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, DLC.
Yeah, I think it was a DLC map. But I'm with the DLC maps came the zombies maps. And goodness me.
Oh, man.
I know that there's the World at War purists who would say that the World at War maps and the way that they played were the best, but I would dispute that and say that playing Nacht und Toten, which was the original map, and Verrucht, Shino Numa, Darius,
yeah,
Kino to Toten, which was the movie theater, and then you had Five and Shangri-La, Moon, Ascension. It was, and the story that was going on in Zombies at the time,
Richtofen,
nothing like it.
Yeah, it was
the characters. Heck, I forget the characters, Richtofen, and Tank, and Nikolai, and yeah. I can't remember the Japanese guy's name.
I can't remember either, but you're so right, Jules. And yeah, it was interesting because I just remember finishing Call of Duty 5, and I remember mate calling me, dude, he's like, there's this like Nazi zombies. Back then it was called Nazi zombies. There's this Nazi zombies mode. And I'm like, what? And like, we played it end on end. And that was like, Nazi on Turtle. There was just, it was like three rooms essentially. And it was just a mystery box, some guns on the wall. That's it. It was literally just a mystery box and that's it. And you get the Browning and the MG42. They were all you, and you just try to survive. And it's like, man, that was a phenomenal game. Like seriously phenomenal. Mm. And then I think like you said,
playing with your mates, like staying up late, playing it. Like, okay, how are we going to survive this round? Okay, we're out of ammo. We're going to need to keep a crawler. Go use the mystery box till we get our guns back. Hopefully, have enough points to go and pack a bunch of it again. Then we can use that. Like,
yeah, and then
so good.
I think it was Verrucht, Shino Numa, and Darius with the first map pack. Verrucht was great. I actually had a lot of fun with Verrucht, and Shino Numa was good. I always found it hard with the swamps, but I think Darius was phenomenal. Like, I loved Darius. And, you know, those are the maps where there was a first, like, upgrading. You got, like, Juggernaut.
Yeah, that was the first game changer, Darius.
Yeah.
I think we they brought perks. I think they might have brought a perk or two in it, same as Shino Numa. But Darius was when they brought in, like, Pack-a-Punch. That was
Did they bring Pack-a-Punch in Darius?
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to think.
Yeah, you had to go and initiate the teleporters.
Yeah, the teleporters, yeah. You can see how they got a lot of influence from Kino. From Darius, but yeah. I just think, like you said, Jordan, it just fleshed it out so beautifully in so many ways, where it was just about the objective of, like I said, with factions, of bettering yourself, skilling yourself up, acquiring these perks, acquiring great weapons, acquiring the right equipment in order to be, you know, that ultimate character and just have a lot of fun with your mates as these zombies are just coming in and you're just fighting for dear life. And you know, you get down, you got to revive him and like crawlers and it was so good. And then Kino, I think that was absolute perfection. That was when
the pinnacle of zombies was
Kino. And I will say like, and I actually really liked Moon. I really liked that. And even like Nuketown Zombies was a random fun mode. Five was the one I was talking about, not Moon. Five was my favorite. And
Five was the Pentagon.
Yeah, I really liked Five. But I will say, look, I feel like Zombies now has become more about the Easter egg and more about completing some sort of story.
It's completely unrecognizable from when we played it.
It's lost the magic.
It started to become a thing in Black Ops 1, especially towards the end, like the Moon Easter egg and Shangri-La Easter egg was so complicated. And then that's what it just became. It became like, get the things to make the wonder weapon for the map. And that's it. Like finding the wonder weapon for each map every time when the Black Ops like map teasers would drop on YouTube and it'd be the devs talking about the maps and then they get to the zombies and be like, they'd be talking about the wonder weapon. Oh man, so many fond memories.
Yeah. I think I would love for them to go back to what the original Zombies was about, which is just surviving and bettering yourself and having fun with mates rather than trying to follow some obscure Easter egg and story. And I don't know, they put a bit too much into it, I think.
Yeah. And there's room for both. Like, have an Easter egg if people want to do it, but don't make it that your success on the map hinges on you doing
it. Yes, because the Easter egg was always secondary and what they did was make it primary. And it's sort of, you know, what I think about the Easter egg is like, it's sort of this thing they stumbled across because they made it natural and then they realized, wow, this is really good. Let's go all in on it. And then it didn't work because they lost the original meaning. And this is the most random reference, Jordan, but you will understand this and hopefully some listeners will. I think of the TV show Arrow, right? Where Arrow, the show Arrow, for anyone who doesn't know the CW show about the Green Arrow DC, it was like the show had two parts where it was a current day and then they had what they called the flashbacks where it's, you know, the whole origin of Arrow or the Green Arrow is that he was stuck on an island. That's where he got really good. And then, you know, he came back. as a vigilante. So they had half the story on the island and how he got better, and they sort of flash back to all the stuff that happened there, and then obviously the main story. And what they happened in season two was season one teased their character Deathstroke, and then season two went all in on Deathstroke, and it, because it just naturally had this really organic way of tying in the story. Season one, the flashbacks were completely different to the main, but the way they were fleshing out the flashbacks in season two, they collided, and it was like this beautiful collision of like season one, you're seeing these two different story arcs, current day and past, and then you see them go into each other in this beautiful way with Sarah Lance and all this. But then once they realized they hit gold with that, because that was actually gold, some of the best TV I've watched.
The first two seasons, amazing. Yeah.
Amazing. And then what they did was they realized, okay, rather than that being some secondary, organic, beautiful thing that tied in, they decided every season we're just going to make the flashbacks time. We're just going to make that. And then they just had these forced stories. There's nothing organic. The flashbacks just lasted one season. Characters had no time to shine. They just forced all these wacky, weird stories in the flashbacks. And
that was when it was like, oh, you know, like I actually did leave the island. Oh, yeah. But I did leave the island. Yeah. Oh. And he was dead. Oh, but he wasn't dead.
Yeah, exactly right, Jordan. And it just lost all meaning because they went all in on this thing. And I see zombies like that where it's lost all its meaning. And don't get me wrong. Like, I remember talking to a friend, but he was a former student of mine. I do maths tutoring as a side hustle. And so he was obviously 16 or 17 at the time. And he was a big fan of COD. And you know, he's obviously of the younger generation, so it's funny we had this conversation. I'm like, you know what, man? Like, you know, zombies is just not the same. He's like, come on, man! Like, you can't expect this day and age with the kids and the attention span like that. Just surviving is not going to hold them. Like, they need the story. They need the next dope. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's fair enough. Like, you just that sort of like base thing. You just and I just reflects back on COD Modern Warfare 2. Where I was saying like, unlocking attachments with other attachments and running 500 meters to unlock Marathon Pro. It's like. It's just that sort of way of unlocking things is dead. Like, that's not what people want.
Yeah. Remember you needed to get 40 FMJ kills to unlock extended mags?
Yeah.
Which was like you had to shoot through a surface.
Yeah, that was insane. And it's sort of like, you know, it's
might have been 20, but even still, that was challenging.
That was challenging. And that's what I mean. People just don't want to play like that. Even I don't want to play like that anymore, man. Yeah. Like, you know, you just become too time poor to do all that. And it's probably sucks for the kids because like we're the ones the games are made for. As we grow up, the games grow up, and you know, yeah. So I don't know, but it is a different time. But I just think there is some magic they've missed with the new zombies, and hopefully they're melded together. So that's our Call of Duty, and we said Black Ops, Modern Warfare 2. I'd love to give Modern Warfare 2019 a shout out. I thought it's probably one of the best modernized Call of Duty experiences. I thought Spec Ops was a hell of a lot of fun. I thought multiplayer was a hell of a lot of fun. Warzone, I thought the campaign was phenomenal. Obviously, I'm not talking about that, but I thought that was a very, very good one of recent time. And but yeah, I mean, I think they've, you know, Black Ops 2 was great. Modern Warfare 3, I enjoyed.
I did. I should. World that's of War. Probably number two on my COD enjoyment list, MW3. It definitely had problems and it definitely wasn't perfect. But yeah, that was another one where I put so many hours into it.
Yeah.
And like I knew everything about that game. I knew like all the spots, I knew all the weapons. You could like hear the weapons fire, and I'd be like, all right, well, I know I'm gonna have to do this properly. Yeah. Oh, OG. Wouldn't it be nice if we had that much time to play a game like that?
Yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, let's go to the last one, and it's somewhat topical. Overwatch, right?
Overwatch, yeah.
So Overwatch for me and you was one of the best experiences I've ever had in a multiplayer. Like, and I think it was compounded by the fact that every one of the boys, we all jumped on and played, and we had teams of five where there's too many of us. There's too many. So someone had to sign off or play on their own or play with another team because we just had so many of us on, and back it was 6v6, right? It wasn't 5v5. And
yeah,
it was just so much fun. And we had the tilt and the competitive, like, we didn't hear this, man. Why are you going this
literally,
guy?
It is the most, with the exception of maybe Hearthstone, it's the most I've ever thought and strategized in a multiplayer game.
Yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
Actually thinking like, oh, gee, okay, you know, who's my heel? Who am I going to be if I need to be the tank? And like actually thinking about the strategy that I'd need, and how we're going to win. And then like what characters I would need to be to best benefit like our team. It's so much fun. Like and this. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I loved like, yes, it was simple design, four classes, damage, tank, healer and defense, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although defense was always a weird one to me, but you know what I mean? But every character was so diverse, even in the same category. They had unique abilities, unique play styles, and they were just so much fun. There was, for those who loved the hit scan, flick killing, there was McCree, you know, Soldier. For those who loved the brawler types, there was the tanks like Reinhardt, Winston. But for those who maybe are newer to the game, who just wanted some good fun, there was characters like Reaper.
And was those range things, the other one? Was it range the other one? And that was weird.
It was initially called defense. Now it's different.
You get chatting and I'll have a look.
Yeah, now it's different. But you know, Reaper and Genji, like those are great characters. Like every character was so much fun. And no matter how good or bad you were at shooters, there was a character for you. There was a role for you where you would feel needed. Like if you're not good, like if you weren't good at DPS and hitting your shots and things like that, be a tank. Where you're swinging your hammer with Reinhardt, and be a good defender, or be a healer where you're Mercy, you know, or that was just, it was just so good like that.
Yeah, you're right. It was defense. Yeah. So your offense characters were Genji, Cole Cassidy, Reaper, Soldier 76, Pharah, and Tracer. And this is from your original cast. And then your defense were Bastion, May, Turbjörn, Hanzo, Junkrat, Widowmaker. Your tanks were D.Va, Reinhardt, Winston, Zarya, Roadhog, and then your support characters, which were healers, were Lucio, Mercy, Zenyatta, and Symmetra.
Yeah, and now it's just tank, damage, and support, I'm pretty sure, because defense didn't make sense because they were just DPS. But
they were meant to be because, like, you were slowing people down.
Yeah.
Like with May, you were defending areas with your turrets if you were Torbjörn or Bastion. Yep. Remember how OP Bastion was at the start?
Oh, mate. Yeah, that was so funny. But I just think, and like even the objective gameplay was fun, like, you know, the payload and the zones and that sort of stuff. The maps were great.
Clutch moments you'd have at the end where it'd be like, oh, quick, get on the thing, they're gonna get it. All right, we're on it, we're frozen it. All right,
let's overtime.
Oh wow, three piece, you've got it.
Yep. And even like things like play of the game where you just like we just banter with each other and it was just a lot of fun. And what I will say, actually, one thing that was phenomenal is the character design, the stories, right? I mean, I'm talking about a campaign here because it was a purely multiplayer game, but I never thought I'd get into the lore like I did. Like, if the environmental storytelling with the maps, the characters, like, who would have thought, like, a multiplayer game, you would get that locked into the story with the animated shorts? And I think it was a real, real sad that, real bad move that they didn't initiate a campaign much sooner because people were just so thirsty for content, for campaign content. We were watching every short. We were analyzing the voice. There were YouTubers dedicated to analyzing all the voice lines for their characters, the costumes and the stories they told, the relationships and Overwatch and Blackwatch and, you know, the Shimada clan, all this sort of stuff. And like, there was just so much, but they did nothing with it. They just did nothing with it. And obviously now they are, and it's just being delayed and it's a bit of a nightmare, but I just think it was phenomenal because not only were the characters unique, but their designs were great. Every character stood out. They were beautifully and wonderfully designed with unique abilities and matched their personalities. And it was phenomenal. I think it is a phenomenal game and one of the best experiences I've had on the PlayStation 4 period. I think it was the most played game ever on the PlayStation 4 for me in terms of hours played. I think it was that Black Ops 3 and 2K13 or whatever. Yeah. So phenomenal game. Yeah, phenomenal game. I can't praise that game enough. Overwatch 2, on the other hand, which is more like Overwatch 1.2, or as the girlfriend review said, Overwatch 2, as in T-O-O, because it's Overwatch 2. So I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, it's that's a whole different state. But just going on to the glory days and the magic of Overwatch 1, I think, phenomenal. All credit, like all praise to Blizzard and Act. Like that was phenomenal.
Yeah.
All right. I think we'll keep it there. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 games that I have on my list that I haven't talked about. So you can see that clearly there are plenty of stuff that I would want to talk about.
Revisiting.
Yeah, definitely we'll be revisiting. And So I just can't wait to talk about it. But yeah, great stuff. Is there anything else, Jordan? You want to?
No, I don't think so. I wish they'd do Black Ops Remastered. I was super excited for a, like, it's, can you believe we didn't get MW2 multiplayer remastered?
I know. I just wanted that broken one man army YouTube quickscope. I just wanted it. Oh, man. I was about to
say, like, oh, it'd be nice if we got MW3 remastered. Like, I think we'll get the campaign eventually. But yeah, having the multiplayer remastered for MW2
would have been good, man. All right. I guess we'll leave it there for today. Nice. I guess clocking in at about an hour, a bit over.
Hour and a bit. Yeah.
Hour and a bit. So great job. And we'll see you next week, everyone. Yeah.
It's good to be back. Good to be recording these again.
Yeah, back into the swing of things. So getting into the end of the year, that Christmas season. So it's going to be a good holiday period for a lot of people. A lot of time. So a lot of good chances to, you know, take some time and play some games. So
yeah. And I hope people are free this week, because the games coming out this week is insane. Like, it's
they are
absolutely nuts, the amount of games coming out this week. If I can find the article that I shared.
Borderlands, Plague Tale, Gotham Knights. There is.
Yeah, so in the next week, or even in the next 10 days or so, these are the games that are coming out. So tomorrow, now the page isn't loading. Come on. Yeah. So we've got games like A Plague Tale, a new Borderlands, a new Tales from the Borderlands, I think is what it's called, which is the Telltale walking sim, choice-based narrative game. We've got Gotham Knights. We've got MW2 coming out. There is a few more, but that link of mine is not working. Oh, now it's working. We've got A Plague Tale Requiem, Ghostbusters Spirits Unleashed, which comes out tomorrow as well. And now as you're reading this, Legacy of Thieves Uncharted comes out on PC on the 19th. Mario Rabbids Sparks of Hope, new Tales from Borderlands. Persona 5 Royal comes out on the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox family of systems. Gotham Knights, Call of Duty MW2. So stacked second half of October.
Stacked. Is MW2 out this week?
No. So you can actually play the campaign early access on Friday. Campaign.
Yeah.
I don't exactly know how, but yeah, no, it comes out on.
I think you have to pre-order. And then it's the Friday after that, isn't it?
Yeah, next. Yeah, it's the following Friday.
Yeah. Oh, Melbourne Cup weekend.
Yeah.
For the Melbourne guys. I'll be in Sydney though. Go figure. All right. So good times ahead. Everyone take care. Have a good week ahead. And we will see you later. PlayStation.